Hey, this is Garrett T. Caps, and you're listening to Walking the Floor.
I'm walking the floor over you.
Walking the floor.
I'm walking the floor.
Walking the floor over you.
Hola, señores and señoritas. This is Chris Shiplett, and you are listening to another edition of Walking the Floor. It's a overcast, kind of moist, clammy day here in New Orleans, Louisiana. I'm recording this in my hotel room. Got a gig tonight with the Blackberry Smoke over at the Fillmore. Very excited about that. Hooked back up with those fellas after a fun week of shows with Elizabeth Cook and Kendall Marvel, all up and down the West Coast, and then headed out to Wichita, Kansas to reconnect with the Blackberry Smoke tour. And I gotta say, we had a pretty magic show in Wichita at the Cotillion Ballroom. I don't know, all the shows have been great with Blackberry Smoke, but that one in particular, I don't know, there was just something special in the air. It was a freezing-ass cold Monday night. And that club was just super cool, and the vibe with the people, I don't know, just seemed festive. Wichita, we'll be back. Unfortunately, the next day in Oklahoma City got canceled because of a frickin' ice storm. So we started our day out thinking we'd have a casual drive down to Oklahoma City and play a nice rock show down there at the Diamond Ballroom, but it turned into like a frickin' 10-hour odyssey through biblical storm after biblical storm, and ice and sleet and rain, and it was a mess. That day was that was a terrible day. Very depressing day in the van, and I gotta say, the Applebee's in Shreveport leaves a lot to be desired. You need to try a little harder there, Shreveport Applebee's. And then at the end of that whole day, I went to my bathroom in my crappy hotel room in Shreveport at whatever it was, the Hilton Garden Inn. It was terrible, terrible. And went to go wash my face after a long day of, struggle, and grabbed my washcloth and opened it up, and there was just a big old gnarly pubic hair on it. I was like, ah, it's the perfect end to a perfect day, goddammit. Can't win. Just call it a loss. Anyway, yesterday we drove down here to New Orleans, and then we got the show tonight. And then tomorrow night, we're playing the Ryman, the Mother Church in Nashville. I'm so excited. Sold out show at the Ryman. It's going to be a good one. And then the night after that, on Saturday, I reconnect for more acoustic solo gigs with Elizabeth Cook and Kendall Marvel. And that's going to be in Memphis at the High Tone. Saturday night, come on Memphis, come on Rob Baird, come and see us. And then we're going to be all over the Southland for the next week or so. And that tour ends in Nashville at the Basement East. And yada, 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 just keep on trucking, everybody. Real quick, wanted to mention that support for Walking the Floor comes from D'Addario. D'Addario, a fine maker of USA-made instrument strings and musical accessories, is committed to sustainability through the Playback Program, recycling over 1 million used instrument strings. For more information on the Playback Program, visit playback.d'addario.com. And of course, Zounds.com, our good buddies over there at Zounds.com, where if you're a musician, that's where you gotta go on the internet to get all your supplies, man. Because every order, $599 and above, is eligible for their exclusive 12-part payment plan. And there's free shipping on every single order. So get over there, Zounds.com. All right, let's get to today's interview. Okay, so today's interview is with my man, Garrett T. Caps. I love this guy. I got turned on to Garrett's music on Twitter, actually. I don't even remember exactly how, but somebody must have linked us in the same tweet, and I found his music, I think particularly his song, In the Shadows Again.
And I listened to it and I was like, whoa, who is this guy? He's incredible. It's like it ticks all of my boxes. It's spooky and cosmic country, psychedelic, but it's also moving and kind of gets your heartbeat and makes you want to like break furniture or something. I don't know. I dig it. I dig his music. He somehow we got a little back and forth going on the Twitter, and turned out he was coming out to LA to do a bunch of shows. And I, in fact, blagged my way onto his show at the Redwood Bar and went down there and opened up for him. And that day, he came by Walking the Floor World headquarters, and we did this interview. And it's fantastic, because Garrett T. Capps is fantastic. And make sure you listen all the way to the end, because we have here, ladies and gentlemen, an exclusive acoustic performance of his brand new song, Going Far, which is going to be on his next record. But in the meantime, listen to his first two records after you listen to this. This is Garrett T. Capps on Walking the Floor. This is Walking the Floor World Headquarters, after all. One of these days, I'm actually going to hang some shit on the wall and take some time to make it look nice. It's like every time I interview anybody in here, like take a picture with them, it's always like really dreary yellow and just looks shitty, and you got to put like 8,000 filters on it. But
yeah,
someday, that's my goal.
Right on.
All right, let's jump in here. All right, so you're based in San Antonio, right?
I am.
And is that where you grew up? Are you like a San Antonio native? Because I noticed San Antonio, like there's a lot of San Antonio pride coming out of your social media.
Totally. I was born in San Antonio. I have a song called Born in San Antonio.
Right, yeah, sure.
And I've moved around Texas over the years, but I've been in San Antonio for the past 5 or 6 years, and that's kind of where I started playing more of my, writing a lot more songs under my name and stuff like that.
Why, were you writing songs like not under your name?
Well, I was playing in other bands.
Oh, okay.
I'm kind of a drummer.
Oh, but like as a solo artist.
Yeah,
right.
I started my solo stuff back home in San Antonio.
And what's the music scene like there? I don't really know San Antonio well. It's like one of the places in Texas that we don't seem to go to often.
Right.
As a matter of fact, I don't know if I've ever been to San Antonio, but I feel like maybe I've played there once or something.
Yeah. I think I was actually at the Foo Fighters gig in San Antonio, maybe in like 2004.
Does San Antonio, is that the city that has like a nice like river walk kind of thing? Right, okay. But I've probably been to like only the most touristy part of San Antonio.
Right,
you know what I mean?
For sure.
So like, what's the music scene really like there?
So the music scene in San Antonio, like the rock kind of oriented stuff is like all over the place. It's totally not very cohesive. There's a bunch of talented people that there's a lot of aimless rock and roll happening down there.
Right.
But
right. I like aimless rock and roll.
But I mean, in the alternative world, it's kind of a mess. But I mean, we got all this culturally significant stuff happening down there, like the Conjunto stuff. And there's a bunch of big Tejano bands.
Right, yeah.
Based in San Antonio. So, I mean, for country rock and roll kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, the scene for that kind of starts right outside of town when you're heading up north towards Austin. I mean, obviously that's...
Right, right. How far from Austin are you?
About 70 miles.
Oh, shit. So you're like...
It's neighbors. Like right there.
Right,
takes,
okay.
There's some traffic and stuff, but
sure.
I mean...
I mean, can you talk a little bit about like sort of... Like Texas, you know, anybody that's listened to my podcast over the years knows like I'm kind of fascinated by Texas and the music, the sort of insular nature of the music scene there, and the way it's like the last remaining place probably in America that has like its own scene of Texas bands that can like tour Texas and make a great living, and like people from Texas love Texas music. Like it's, you can't say the same for anywhere else that I know of in America.
I mean, it's amazing. That's what I mean. I didn't listen to country music a whole lot growing up.
Right.
I listened to, I mean, not directly, but like I grew up listening to a lot of grittier classic rock, like the Rolling Stones stuff. But
sure.
You know, that has country music in it.
Yeah.
But just being in the, like near the hill country, which the hill country basically starts like right on the northern edge of San Antonio, which is kind of where I grew up.
Right.
So, I mean, I was always around that stuff, and like my family isn't like some country music jamming family or whatever, we're just a suburban San Antonio family, but
right,
Like, I grew
Hold on. You didn't grow up picking your banjo on the front porch with no. your dad? God damn it. You're blowing not. Your whole bio here, son.
But, no, I mean, the music scene, like, in the hill country, in northern San Antonio, like, I grew up always kind of brushing shoulders with, like, the Steve Earle and Robert Earl Keen right. stuff. And then, yeah, like... Yeah. I don't know, the whole red dirt phenomenon.
Yes.
You know, when I was in high school, like, I had a bunch of friends that, like, were into that stuff, and that's where you'd go to party.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
So we'd go see...
Who are like, some of the big red dirt bands?
Like, we'd go see Cory Morrow.
Right.
Or, I mean, Pat Green was pretty big, I guess, in the late 90s, and mm-hmm. well, that's when he broke, and Randy Rogers...
Sure. Still going.
Yeah. I mean, they're all
Randy Rogers seems to have kind of broken out beyond that, whereas a lot of folks don't seem to.
Yeah.
You know, like, why go play fucking a couple states over to nobody when you can play to a big crowd at home?
It seems that way. I mean, and it is amazing how you can just tour Texas and make a living off it and play killer shows all the time. And like the Thursday, Friday, Saturday kind of situation that a whole bunch of my friends do and seem to really like it.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting because listening to your music, I was curious about sort of what your key influences were. And if you came up, you know, nowadays in America, in the big umbrella that is, you know, Americana or roots or however you want to define it. You know, there's more people, it seems like, now that came up and are playing that kind of stuff that actually listen to country music growing up, whereas the early stuff was like guys that came from like rock and roll or punk rock, you know what I mean? Like a lot of it, really.
For sure.
And in your music, like I didn't know if I was misreading it, but I hear like X and shit like that, so I didn't know if you came more from that side of the aisle.
I mean, I grew up listening to rock and roll.
Right.
And I mean, I've always been really musically... Like I've the melody and like everything but the lyrics was like a big thing for me like growing up, and
everything but the lyrics.
Yeah, like I never cared about the lyrics or anything. Yeah. I just like sang along to the song. I don't know what that says about me, but
it's funny. You know, I was kind of the same way. Like there, I maybe like a one line or two lines or something would really resonate, but like I couldn't sit down and play you and sing through my favorite songs.
Right.
You know what I mean? I never that wasn't where my brain went. I think I was listening to what the guitar player was doing.
For sure.
Too much or something.
And I don't know. I loved mostly just rock and roll stuff. I mean, I wasn't like a punk rocker dude, but I mean, I listened to everything, man. Yeah. And hell, but I guess growing up in the 90s, like there was a bunch of like alt country oriented stuff on the radio.
Sure, sure, sure.
Like I loved that album. Yeah. I mean, I loved that album, Bringing Down the Horse by the Wallflowers.
Yeah, fuck yeah. Yeah, great record.
There's a bunch of great songs on that one. I like knew all the lyrics to all those songs, but I never thought of it as like a country situation.
Right.
But I mean, I started playing drums that's what I played my whole life.
Okay. So were you a drummer in other bands?
Yeah.
Prior to...
I got real into like garage rock and roll.
Right.
And then I got real
like into... Like who are the bands? Like the Humpers and that sort of thing? Or like or like old 60s like...
Yeah. Know?
Right.
I mean, I like a lot of the old 60s stuff. But I mean, I like a lot of the current stuff too. I mean, some of my favorites... This is kind of dorky, but some of my favorite stuff to play along to as a kid was like the first Foo Fighters record.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
Alone and Easy Target. The drum
solo
in that.
Do you have some do you have some Grohl drum lick chops in your arsenal?
And I've tried. But you know, I got real into Queens of the Stone Age as a kid.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And but I mean before that I was listening to a lot of classic stuff like The Who or The Stooges or you know, some of these more just like no-frills classic rock guys.
Yeah, sure.
But
and what sort of piqued your interest in the country side of things?
Well, I think at a certain point I went and saw Steve Earle live at Floor's Country Store. I think he was touring off the Revolution Starts Now.
That's a good record.
And there's something about that. It was really wild. It was like a politically charged event.
Right. It's funny looking back now that we thought that was the end of the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
We had no idea.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly had no idea.
Yeah.
But something about just kind of like the attitude and how it was real edgy, but like, and heavy, but it was like all
right
about these catchy like country songs and with some rockers thrown in. And
yeah, yeah.
I got pretty heavy into Steve Earle, and that kind of opened the floodgates for all the guys that influenced him, like Townsend, Guy Clark. And
right. But then you just kind of work your way back.
Yeah. And I always thought that country music was kind of uncool or something. But then I realized like how much of a impact the culture has had on me growing up.
Sure.
I mean, I'm a huge fan of guys like Robert Earl Keen. And
yeah, yeah.
I got real into all the Austin stuff. Jerry Jeff Walker and Armadillo World Headquarters.
Yeah, that's good
situation.
Stuff. Yeah.
I mean,
was it that kind of blow your mind when you started peeling back that onion, like all the shit that was right there on your doorstep?
Yeah, for sure.
That had been there on your doorstep, you know?
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I've always been kind of fascinated with, especially in San Antonio, like what bands had played there a long time ago.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And like what shows. I mean, obviously heavy metal in San Antonio was like a big thing.
Right.
But I found out at one point like how ripping the honky tonk scene was down there.
Yeah,
like,
it must have been, right?
Before, like, I mean, I grew up thinking Austin was like, I mean, we always lose our shows to Austin to right. this day.
Right, but, sure.
But back in the day, it was the opposite.
Yeah.
And like all the classic guys were playing like all these badass places like the Farmer's Daughter and stuff like that.
Yeah. It's funny, man. I had a very similar experience where, you know, Southern California used to be just littered with honky tonks all over LA, all over Southern California, all over the West Coast. It was just every right. town had big barn dances, little honky tonks bars, the whole thing. I mean, it was a huge country music scene on the West Coast back in the day. But when I was, you know, a teenager and young adult going to shows, you know, most of those places were long since closed down or, you know, kind of, you know, on the skids or whatever. So a lot of the, you know, they still existed. And so you go to like punk rock shows or heavy metal shows at like the Palomino
yeah.
or the fucking Foothill or these places that you had no idea the history of it because I didn't give a shit at that point. And I didn't
right.
know anything about it. I'd see pictures, there'd be pictures of Buck Owens on the walls. And you go, who the fuck are those old guys? Yeah. You know,
don't
you
worry
had
about
no
it, yeah.
idea what had happened in those rooms, man.
Yeah.
And it was like many years later, I looked back and went, whoa, no shit. Like you read sort of histories of West Coast country and stuff, go, whoa, I was totally in that room, but many years later.
Yeah, for sure. It takes time, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, San Antonio's, I of course, found out about Doug Somm.
Right. And, have you watched that documentary?
Oh, yeah.
That's
for sure.
That's a great documentary.
Yeah. And just like the. How he kind of like carried the San Antonio sound and attitude up to like, well, into the big world of rock and roll back in the early days.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
But then like going into the 70s and he was the dude from San Antonio.
Yeah.
I mean.
Is anybody going yeah. to San Antonio?
I mean, actually like Augie Myers still lives in San Antonio.
Oh, and, really?
Like we've played some shows with him recently.
No shit.
It's wild knowing yeah. that, I mean. It's easy.
Have
to
you been embraced a bit from some of your, you know, the Texas legends?
I don't
like. Have you gotten to interact with them? I guess.
Yeah,
you know
I mean,
like warm up their shows and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Right.
When we released this record a few months ago, we did a big release party with Flaco Jimenez and Augie Myers.
Wow. No
and
shit.
We played my song "Born in San Antonio" at the end of the night
yeah.
with like Augie and it was cool. Like, it seems like there's a good buzz going on
yeah.
down there. Like, especially with Austin's growth and, like, everyone just is starting to outpour and we're starting to see all these people show up in San Antonio.
Like, people that are like, fuck it, Austin's gotten it too crowded. We're going to, what's the next best
or whatever.
Thing?
Well, yeah. There's this huge city that's extremely sleepy and relaxed and affordable.
Right.
Right down
right.
the road. And all right. anyone really thinks about is the Riverwalk or the San Antonio Spurs or the Alamo.
Right.
But, you know, I've been bringing a whole bunch of friends down. I host shows all the time.
Oh, and, cool.
And people seem to really dig it down there. I love it.
So at what point did you sort of make the switch from being a drummer in rock bands to fronting your own thing and writing songs and singing and all that?
Yeah. So have you been to San Marcos, Texas? It's outside of Austin.
I don't know.
It's a cool hill country It's a college town.
Okay.
But it's probably like 15 minutes south of Austin if there's no traffic or whatever.
On a totally unrelated question, but since you asked me about something that's outside of Austin, have you been to fucking Style Station?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it's in West
On the way
Texas,
to Fort Worth kind of thing? Yeah, between Austin and Fort Worth.
I stopped by there last time I drove through.
Oh, that place is that guy is so funny.
Yes.
He's insane.
That guy was...
In a good way.
What's that guy's name?
I don't know, but I have it in my contacts.
Yeah.
Because it's just so nuts.
They had some pretty sick threads, too.
We heard about that from Mitch that plays drums with Dwight Yoakam.
Uh-huh.
And there's this whole story with, I think Dwight's bus broke down right outside of there. And I don't know if that's how they met the guy or what. But there's this whole thing with him coming out and trying to help them get their bus going or whatever. And so my buddy Mitch had told me this whole story. And he was like, the guy's kind of nuts, you know, but you got to go in there. It's just crazy, you know, vintage everything, you know.
Yeah.
It just looks like a junkyard until you go in there. It's bananas. And so we went in there, and the guy immediately started, like, he wasn't like yelling at us in a mean way, but kind of very aggressively talking at all of us. And we said, oh, we're friends with Mitch. And he went, God, Mitch, that motherfucking asshole, and Dwight Yoakam, motherfucker. He just went in, it was like fucking, it was everything Mitch had warned us it would be and more.
And you're like trapped in there for a while.
It was great. Yeah, happily.
Yeah, I love that place.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to go back by there as soon as I can.
Anyway, San Marcos.
So San Marcos is kind of like, definitely has this hill country vibe to it. And like when I was living there, that was when I kind of started getting into a lot of this songwriter stuff and starting to try to write some songs. And
right,
that is what happened. And I didn't record an album until a few years, maybe like 2012 or 13. I didn't start doing my solo stuff until then.
And what your latest one is, what, your third record?
It's my second full length.
Second full length, okay.
But I don't know. There's something about it. It's like kind of like a classic story. Like in some ways, like I got really into the music and I started going to shows and like thinking that's something that I would be able to do. So I started trying doing it.
And so, okay. So who? What's the name of the label that puts your records out now?
Shotgun House.
Shotgun House. And what's their little tagline? Something like hit making records.
Hill country hit making machine.
Right. Is that who put? Have they put out all your records?
Just this one. And
okay.
And he's working on a few others from some really cool artists. So
how'd you put out your first record?
It was just on CD.
Just did like you printed it up yourself kind of thing?
Oh, okay. That's the one that has my song Born in San Antone on it. And it seems to be...
Is that the one?
It that's seems the magic to be the song that people have caught on to.
Okay.
Which I didn't think that people outside of San Antonio would like that song. And then over the years, playing it outside of town, it's become like this thing where played at the end of the set and it's this big shit show. And then like all of a sudden, like now people everywhere seem to enjoy the song. There's something about it they like.
Do you get like Texas expats coming to your shows in Connecticut and shit like that?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah.
There were some out this past evening.
Oh, okay.
Wearing Spurs shirts and stuff. I mean, all you got to do is yell about stuff that, like, really, all I do in that song is yell about specific stuff.
Right.
Like, restaurants or
tacos
or whatever.
Well, it's funny because that sort of supports the theory that the more specific your songwriting is, the more relatable it will be, which is like the opposite of what you would think. You know, you think you need to get real vague so everyone can, you know, get it, but it's the opposite, right? It's like you got to get real down and, you know, laser point fucking specific.
And it's always felt like a cheap shot in some ways, but then again, like being able to connect with people like that in some ways just by, you know,
if it makes people happy and they come to your shows, then fucking God bless you.
For sure.
You know?
And yeah, it's cool to yell about music, the music scene in San Antonio and stuff. Did you ever play Taco Land back in the day?
I don't think so.
Man, I thought you might know about that spot.
I don't. When I was in No Use for a Name, which is the band I was in before Foo Fighters, I don't know if we ever played San Antonio. We played Houston, Dallas, Austin. You know, we played those towns all the time, but... I don't know that we ever played San Antonio.
Yeah, man. I thought maybe y'all would have cruised through there. That was like our South Texas CBGBs.
Okay.
It's like a legendary punk rock club.
Right. Yeah, the ones that I always remember were like Emo's.
Right.
Fitzgerald's. And
for sure.
Some of those spots, you know.
Yeah. But,
okay, so you start doing your own thing. You put out your first couple of records yourself.
So yeah.
So what led to you putting out your latest one on this label?
Well, I wanted to do like my album before this, Elos Lonely Hipsters, was kind of a product of me just playing around Texas over the years.
Right.
And it was just like songs that had been around for a while, kind of in the rock and roll cowpunk vein,
yeah,
or something. But that wasn't what I was trying to do. I was trying to just write country songs.
Right.
And they kind of came out that way. But this next time around, I wanted to try and do something a little more out there. And I had a collection of songs and a aesthetic idea for the production of the record.
Who produced it?
My friend Lucas Oswald. He works in the indie rock world,
right,
primarily. And I thought it'd be cool to work with him on this one.
Yeah.
To like get a different angle. Because there's so many great like producers in the Central Texas area, even. A ton of them in the Central Texas area.
Right.
That I could have worked with that make all the great country records and stuff.
Sure. But
approaching it from a different angle seemed like the right thing to do.
Like, how would you describe it? Like, to me, it's got like a cosmic country kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, I always think of it as like country music with like an Echoplex thrown in there.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, it kind of came to be like I had this collection of songs. Some of them were old, some of them were brand new. And I started collaborating with some really experimental artists in San Antonio that like were really into like minimalist stuff. Like, I think we bonded over like listening to Terry Riley or like some of this like hippie composition stuff.
Right.
And
wait, who's Terry Riley?
He invented like a style of minimalist like percussive music.
Mm.
Where you play like a arpeggio on a marimba for, he, you know, like Steve Reich or Phil Glass are like in that world.
Okay.
Like real soundscapey.
Right.
Transcendental stuff. Yeah. And I got into that, and I got into like, that led me into like krautrock stuff like Neu,
oh,
and
shit,
Can, which, yeah, like, yeah, for like a few years I was just like, that's all I listened to. Just,
right. There's, it's so interesting because oftentimes when people get into that sort of more, I don't know exactly what you call it, experimental, ambient, you know, less melodic, shall we say,
right,
music, it like kills their songwriting. But your songs are like, have hooks, you know? They're,
yeah,
like, they're catchy. So I kind of hear the influence you're talking about, but it didn't seem to like ruin your ability to write a catchy song.
Well, that's what made it hard recording the record, because my friend Justin Boyd, who's a sound artist, he's like, he does all these sound installations and stuff. He like comes from like the art world.
Okay.
And I come from the songwriting / being a rock band world. So yeah, like we decided to collaborate and see what we could do to these songs. And we're both excited to be like working with someone that doesn't like have any experience in the other side.
Yeah, yeah.
And basically we started running my acoustic guitar through his modular synth setup, which he has like, I didn't even know that much about modular synthesizer.
Shit, I don't know anything about it.
I mean, they're basically like, you know, like a huge rack mount thing. And they're like, is the most badass guitar pedals ever. Like some of the same companies seem to make these modular synth things. And they're, you know, there's like a bunch of patch cables. It's extremely complicated.
Yeah, yeah.
And he started doing live effects to my songs. So sometimes it would sound like there was like a chorus on my acoustic guitar.
Right.
But all he has to do is hit a knob and then it turns into this just like epic soundscape. You can't even hear the percussive parts of it.
Yeah, wow.
But the record was like, I was really pretty adamant on getting it going. Yeah. So like I got a band together and he asked if he could join the band. So that kind of threw us for a loop.
Does he tour with you?
Yeah, I mean,
no. Is he doing the modular synth stuff live?
Yes.
No, like, shit. I look forward to seeing that this evening.
Well, it's not going to be tonight.
Oh.
I kind of like that. Moving forward a little bit, that band we call it NASA Country.
Okay.
And it's turned into this collective of like 12 people.
you have like an art house vibe to you. Like, I don't know if you have a background in like the visual arts or something, anything, but I get that vibe just from what you put out into the world.
Well, thank you. I think that's just hanging out with people that are into artists. That stuff.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I like progression and pushing the music into like a different territory that I feel like it hasn't been done before is really important to me.
Right.
And I feel like on this last record, bringing the modular synthesizer dude in and really trying to push it out there, but at the same time, like keeping it accessible. And that was like why that album was such a headache, because on one half of the band was like, they don't care about the hooks or like making the audience that listens to country music happy in most ways. And then on my end, I'm like, well, these are just my songs, you know?
Yeah.
And some of these songs were older. We had no intention of like messing with them in that way. And then there's two songs on the record, Here Right Now and Trouble's Calling. And those were written like for the band. And you can really tell, like they give it room to breathe and stuff.
Right.
And then some of like the more traditional songs, like we're really trying to figure out like how are we going to incorporate these effects into this song. They just it just wants to be like a dance hall song.
Right. Well, you know, one thing I noticed on the record, am I hearing a lot of lap steel?
Yes.
Like the steel on there is not pedal steel, it's lap steel, right?
Yeah, so my buddy Torin, he plays Hawaiian lap steel.
Okay, so was that a stylistic choice to not use pedal steel, which would be sort of the more common thing nowadays? But there's a real like, there's a vibe to lap steel,
right?
You know,
yeah, for sure. I mean,
different thing.
It's kind of what we like. 2 weeks before we went in the studio, I knew my friend had this old Fender lap steel, and I got it and I gave it to Torin, the guitarist, and I said, hey man, let's have some lap steel on this record. He'd never played lap steel before.
No shit.
So it was kind of it was cool in that way.
Yeah.
And that's what he plays. But there's kind of a, like, San Antonio does not have like a bunch of like badass touring musicians like just hanging out in town all the time.
Right, like Austin or Nashville or somewhere. Right, sure.
And we're randomly recording the core tracks for this record in this gallery in Southtown, and I found out from a friend of a friend that this pedal steel player was in town. And this is during Fiesta. Like, Fiesta is like Mardi Gras in San Antonio.
Okay.
It's just like a 2 week massive party.
Yeah, sure.
And I don't know why this guy was in town, but this guy named BJ Cole was in town, like visiting a friend. And he's like this legendary pedal steel player. He's a British guy. And like, he happened to be staying like
a British pedal steel player. I've never heard of such a thing.
You look up his credits, and like, he's the guy. He's been doing it forever.
Oh no shit!
And he, like, I think his most famous credit, or it's what people talk about, is he plays like the pedal steel in Tiny Dancer.
Oh, okay.
But I mean,
that's a good credit.
But he's collaborated with a bunch of like kind of psychedelic bands. I mean, like every band,
right?
Pretty much. And he happened to be staying down the road from us when we were recording, and somehow we got a hold of him, and he came over and he cut pedal steel on the opening track, Born Into a Ballroom, and the I-35 Waltz, which is like kind of a more complicated song for me.
Yeah.
And like, he just totally destroyed it, and it was just like this totally bizarre thing that this guy happened to be staying right down the road from us, because he'd said he'd come to Austin every summer since the 80s, and this is his first time in San Antonio. But he like absolutely destroyed. He makes a lot of like soundscapes, and he's done a lot of like psychedelic kind of Daniel Lanois
stuff. Sure.
And it was just like kind of the stars aligned magically in San
Sometimes
Antonio.
Sometimes you just find the person, you know.
Yeah.
You just found each other.
It was really wild.
Yeah.
So talking about the steel and stuff, like, there's two tracks with pedal steel from the legendary BJ Cole.
Nice. So I think the way that I discovered your music was, I was thinking about this morning, like, how the fuck did I find Garrett's music? I think I saw something on Twitter about it was tied into like, you got a song in the show Billions.
Right. So
So how did that come about? Because that seems like a big sink for you know, an up
for me.
And comer.
Well, I mean, I don't have like a like someone doing that work for me, like
which is crazy because there's a lot of people pitching those shows. So how did they find yours?
So Like, this is where that song Born in San Antonio comes into play. I wrote that song just to play around town.
Yep.
And people kind of dig it or whatever, but like everyone in San Antonio seems to be like kind of late to the game on stuff. Like they need someone telling them this song's cool. Like they they can't just enjoy it for what it is, it seems. But I like got on some playlists on Spotify, and that song was one of them.
Okay.
And Brian Koppelman, the director of that show, who's directed a bunch of movies and shows, but he's a huge music guy.
Yeah.
And he's like a huge roots and Americana music guy.
Mm.
And apparently the song came on like his like Discover Weekly playlist or algorithm generated playlist one day, and he just like freaked out or something. He like emailed my email on my webpage.
Yeah.
And it bounced back, and it, like no one had like tried to email the specific email. And like he like messaged me like on all my social media outlets, and I like totally like it's like who the hell is this guy? Yeah. It was Brian Koppelman.
My leg.
Just, like freaked out over the song.
Yeah,
and that was like over a year ago, and he kept on saying when I talked to him on the phone, "Oh, I'm definitely using the song in my show." Like. However, I can help you. Like, I love this song. Like, I was just like, all right. But 7 or 8 months later, I finally got this contract to the show. I totally didn't know if it was going to happen.
Nice.
But,
I mean, do you feel that? Like, do you feel an uptick in your streams from that? Or, you know, selling more tickets? Like, people coming, heard about you on Billions. Like, is that actually have an effect?
Well, what's cool to me about it is it is my song about San Antonio. It's not some other song.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the first thing that plays in episode one
of the last season.
The new season.
Yeah.
Or the last season. And it's like pretty epic how they use it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I was born in San Antonio, like immediately. And that show is like heavily promoted and like gigantic and popular and stuff.
Sure.
And so immediately all these people from like all over the world, like they either had a connection to just the kind of rock and roll style of the song, but like all these people from like San Antonio, like everywhere, like started following me. But I was able to kind of prep for the release of the record around that TV show coming out.
Right.
So
that was the song off your first record, not the current one.
Right.
So have you found that with that kind of stuff happening with you? Has the sort of the powers that be that control Americana playlists and festivals and things like that, have you made inroads in that whole world?
Yeah, I mean, so I'm like trying to get on the road a lot more.
Right.
So that's kind of the idea of me playing with this band, Mayu and Broussard. They're a rock and honky tonk band, and they've learned some of my new songs.
Oh, great.
And they've been going on the road forever. So we're combining forces, but as far as festivals and stuff like that goes, like, I think because of the show, or I still am not exactly sure, but like Europe and stuff is like starting to catch on. I'm taking my band, the Three Timers, who's my San Antonio band, rock and roll band. I guess I have a few lineups, but we're going to Holland in October.
Right.
And we're going to play some pretty badass festivals that, like, are happening.
Right. I mean, they love, like, roots music over there.
Yeah.
For sure.
So, yeah, like, people seem to be real excited about the...
What about stateside? Are you touring a lot here?
Yeah. We're doing a tour in September, and then I'm planning some more stuff in January. Just get going. I was out there as much as possible.
Great.
And I'm working on the new record, too.
Oh, no, already?
Yeah.
Wait, when did the In the Shadows come out?
May 5th.
Of this? Okay, so you're already that. God damn, man. That's like some 1963 schedule.
Well, I have some like songs that I'm really, really proud of, and I really want to do like a record of just like... This last one was very conceptual.
Right.
Aesthetically. And that's cool. I want to incorporate some of that stuff. Like some of the soundscapes and all that, but like I've just been like really, really trying to channel honesty and like I don't know, it's been a rough year for me and my family and stuff.
Oh, really?
And songwriting has taken like a whole new form of like therapy, I guess.
Sure.
And I found these songs that I'm extremely proud of, and they feel good to perform or write.
Right.
And I have this idea for the record, and I'm just going to try and knock it out this year. I think it's going to be an excellent follow-up to this last one.
I like when people put out records, just bang, bang, bang.
Yeah, man. Nice. I'm excited. For sure.
On that end, would you... I know we didn't exactly talk about this, but would you like to perform a song for us now?
Sure.
Us, and by us, I mean the entire internet.
Definitely. Absolutely. Is this the guitar to use?
Yes. You could definitely use that. I've got a pick. I've got a pick.
This song is called Going Far. It will be on my new one whenever it comes out. Long before there were machines and robots wandering these plains, when the stars above us shined a bit more bright, you could hear the lonely whistle of some running in the rain, singing songs upon their horses in the night. I'm going far away, going far away. I'm going far away. If you know just what I'm knowing, then you know I'll never stay. Take me with the wind, I'm going far away. And on porches rocking slowly, folks could kill an afternoon just talking about their business and their lives. Some wishing they were somewhere else, some wishing they could choose, but for now they had their whiskey and their wine. I'm going far away, going far away. I'm going far away. If you know just what I'm doing, then you know I'll never stay. Take me with each sip, I'm going far away. And downtown when the house was open, men without their wives spent their money in the open rooms upstairs, while their honeys in their homes tried to rid it from their minds, brewing sweet tea, dreaming of someone who cared. I'm going far away, going far away. I'm going far away. If you know just what I'm knowing, then you know I'll never stay. Take me with my dreams, I'm going far away. And on the branch of an oak tree hung a knot tied in a rope, with people gathered round a normal circumstance, while a shadow of a man with barely skin and bone cries in terror, and they tie up both his hands. I'm going far away, going far away. I'm going far away. If you know just what I'm knowing, then you know I'll never stay. Take me with the Lord, I'm going far away. Take me with the Lord, I'm going far away. Woo! Right on.
So are you telling me that that was like a world premiere, exclusive new track that the world's never heard before?
Sort of.
Thanks for coming down, Dad. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
Yes, yes, yes. That was Garrett T. Capps on Walking the Floor playing his brand new song, Going Far, an exclusive right here on Walking the Floor. Make sure you get on over to walkingthefloor.com. I'm going to put up a bunch of links to all the Garrett T. Capps stuff so you can see where he's at, see what he's doing. You know, he's such a cool dude. He actually reached out to me the other day and asked if I wanted to jump on a show he's putting together for South by Southwest. Unfortunately, I already had a show booked that same night, so I'm not going to be able to do it, but I'm sure I will run into him somewhere down there. Love this guy. Okay, I will see you out on the road next week with Elizabeth Cook and Kendall Marvel all over the southern states of America. That's it for this week. We'll see you soon. Adios, amigos!